Well, this morning we're going to be focusing our message in a very brief passage of Scripture found in Joshua chapter 24, reading verses 14 through 15. You'll find them familiar, but I hope that we'll see some new things in them today. Now fear the Lord and serve Him with all faithfulness. That's quite a way to start, isn't it? Now fear the Lord and serve Him with all faithfulness. Throw away the gods your ancestors worshipped beyond the Euphrates River and in Egypt and serve the Lord. But if serving the Lord seems undesirable to you, can you believe Joshua is saying this to his people? Now if serving the Lord seems undesirable to you, then choose yourselves this day whom you will serve, whether the gods your ancestors served beyond the Euphrates or the gods of the Amorites in whose land you are living. But as for me and my household, we will serve the Lord. But as for me and my household, we will serve the Lord. Well, I'm a child of the 60s. I grew up in the 60s. And so that means that Bob Dylan is somebody that I listened a lot to, still do. Yeah. So there's at least a dozen childs of the 60s here this morning. Yeah, Bob Dylan just won the Nobel Prize for literature. Can you believe that? But anyway, he sang a song that was one of his most well-received songs, but it was in a period where he was wrestling with who God is, and it was a song that was called, "You Gotta Serve Somebody." Do you remember that? You gotta serve somebody. Well, you can be rich or you can be poor. He would make a long litany, but at the end of it, he would say, but you gotta serve somebody. You may serve the devil or you may serve the Lord, but you gotta serve somebody. That's the whole thing that Joshua is laying out for his people. Oh, you may be serving the devil, but you got to serve the Lord. You got to serve somebody. And of course, Bob Dylan was suggesting that what we got to do is serve the Lord. Joshua is saying it even more strongly. We have to make a decision about who we're going to serve. We keep trying to find this middle ground, don't we? Well, I was hoping not to serve the devil because that sounds pretty bad. But I didn't really want to serve the Lord because that sounds pretty tough. So I was hoping that I could kind of just serve me down the middle. And Joshua was saying, no. You're going to have to make a decision. And we're going to go to Shechem. A great little town, Shechem, where Abraham came in the early years and settled for a little bit. We have a long history of tradition inside of Shechem. It's an ancient city. And it's there that I'm going to call the people of Israel. Let's come, join me. We're going to go to Shechem. So all the people come to Shechem. And there in Shechem, Joshua stands before the people and gives them a long history lesson of all of the things that they have been through. Remember when we were in this land and then we got exiled out of this land and we had to go to Egypt and we lived 400 years in exile in Egypt as slaves to the Egyptians. Remember how tough that was, but then God sent Moses and Moses came and Moses rose up with the Egyptians and stood against them and he helped us to be set free. And we were set free from the Egyptians, but then we got across the Dead Sea, the Red Sea. Remember how we got through the Red Sea? The waters parted, we came down, came up on the other side on dry ground, and came on the other side, and all the Egyptians were killed in the Red Sea. Wow. And then we wandered through the wilderness, and we were the kind of people that were rebellious and disobedient towards God, and so we ended up having to wander in the wilderness for 40 years. Do you know that if you set out from where the Israelites set out from in Egypt, Memphis, Egypt, is where they started out, that they could easily walk it to the promised land in three weeks? And they ended up walking in the wilderness for 40 years because of their disobedience. Joshua says, remember that? But all the time, while we were in the wilderness, God looked after us. He gave us water. When we couldn't find any water, He gave us food, manna. When we couldn't eat, we got quail. When we were hungry for meat, all of those things were looked after. And then we came to Israel, and we were able to cross into Israel. Again, the Lord parted the Jordan River. Now we came down through the Jordan River, and we came up on the other side, and we made 12 stones as a marker to remind us that God had been with us. Remember that? Joshua says. You remember that? Oh, yes. Yes, we remember that. And Joshua says, well, you know, while we've been here in the land of Israel, we've not done very well, actually. We came in, we captured the land, but I've noticed that we've begun spiritually to decline. We're not paying attention to God the way we used to be able to pay attention to God. I think we need to do something about that. Let's gather Shechem, and we're going to make a covenant here today. What's the covenant? That the Lord will be your God and we will serve God. He will be our God. That's going to be the covenant. The people say, we will make that covenant. Joshua says, I don't know. Our record is not very good. No, we will keep that covenant. And Joshua says, well, if you don't, some of you aren't going to. You're going to make other covenants. But he said, as for me and my family, as for me and my household, we will serve the Lord. What a powerful picture of what begins to become a formation for covenant that all of us in the future would need to hang on to. This morning, we're coming to the close of the series of messages that we began a long time ago, or a few weeks ago on the family. And this morning, I want to help us think about what it means to have a set of family values that are rooted in this passage of Scripture. But as I think about that, there's one caveat that I need to give you this morning. This is going to require some response on your part, on all of our part. The kind of message I'm going to preach today will require you to do some work out of it. And I'm going to tell you frankly that if you're not prepared to do the work, this next half hour is really going to be a colossal waste of time. You may as well go home, frankly, because if you don't do the work, then you've just spent a half an hour listening to something that you have no intention of implementing. But if you want to begin to talk about the things that are going to be shared here this morning, then you'll need to go away and actually begin to think about some of these things and to do the work as a family of talking it through. Now, what do I mean by a family? It of course, means anybody here this morning. It can be single or married or children or all those kinds of things. We're all part of a family. I don't like the title of the message this morning, Family Values, very much. Because for many people, it conjures up in their minds the right-wing, conservative, religious wing, that kind of imagery. But all we're talking about this morning is core values. We're talking about what it really means to believe and how we live out in this world that is sometimes hostile and mostly dismissive to what we are as Christians believe, what we understand to be foundation to all of life. That's what we're going to be talking about. Well, the nation of Israel, the family of God, has had a habit of forgetting what truly mattered, their family values. And what happens is that we think we are the most important. What bothers us, what we want, is at the top of the list. And it wasn't long, and the family of Israel was off doing whatever they wanted to do. So here is Moses, now in Shechem, creating the covenant with them. Joshua, at the end of the covenant, decides to make himself and his family the example for his people. A great leader says, I cannot call the people to do what I'm not prepared to do myself. And so Joshua says, I believe that God is calling the people of Israel to do these things. Therefore, my family and I are going to set the example. We're going to demonstrate how we can live it out. That was his declaration. As for me and my house, we will serve the Lord. Even if everyone around us wants to do something else, this little family will do what it set out to do, which is to serve the Lord. That's the cornerstone. That's the bedrock foundational value that would now govern everything that Joshua's family would do. Any decision that they would make would now come back to this set of core values, and this core value, the Lord will be our God and we will be his people. Many years ago, when our family was young, our children were very young, Lori and I sat down and began to work through what we came to know as our own family values. It took several weeks, probably a couple of months, of conversation to come to what we believed were values that would be something that we could really own as a family. Values are statements about things that really matter to us. Values are things that move us. Values are things that motivate us. Values are the things that set purpose in our lives. People value many different things. Some families have values like, we want to make a better contribution towards the environment. Other values of families might be, we hold education as a very high value. Other families say, travel matters a great deal to us as a family. And so you manage your life, your family, around those particular values so that you can achieve the things that you set out to be. Those are kinds of values. So we took Joshua's core values as a family and began to make them our own. I want to share with you four key family values that I think form the structure of the kind of values that we need as a family. First value is this: Christ at the center of our home. As for me and my house, we will serve the Lord. That's what Joshua was saying. That's what we're saying when we say Christ at the center of our home. It's around this core value that everything in our home from then on would be shaped. All of our other values, whether we thought travel was important or environment, whatever, would be servants to this core value, Christ at the center of our home. Christ at the center means that there's no other thing that is greater than He is in our home, that there will be no other gods. We won't serve anything else above who God is. Jesus Christ is the only one whom we will worship and whom we will serve. Well, Joshua in this passage goes on to describe how idolatry will not be tolerated. In Joshua's day, idolatry was obvious. They made Asherah poles, sort of like a totem pole, a tall wooden pole, and they would then put figures on it, and it was to be addressed to the goddess Ashtoreth, who was their fertility goddess. They made wooden and stone idols, and they would take them and set these Asherah poles or the stone idols up on the very highest places in the community, highest hills, and then would they go there and they would worship them. They worshiped the sun and the moon. But of course, for us here in this sanctuary, here in our culture, that's not our issue. I know that some cultures practice this kind of idolatry. If I were to take you, I could take you with me. We'd go to some of the Vietnamese restaurants or the Thai restaurants in our community, and you would see there's something that's called a spirit shelf, and on there you'll see some figurines, some idols, and they put some food on there. So we see idolatry like that around us, but it's not much practiced. We have a different kind of idolatry. We're subtler in our idolatry. We're more skilled at hiding our idolatry behind various veils of acceptability, but it's much more insidious. The other day I heard George Strombolopoulos, who is a TV commentator, say this. He was interviewing somebody. He said, well, you know what, I don't believe in God. And then he stopped for quite a long moment and thought, and then he said, well, I guess I'd have to say that my religion is music. See how I mean, that's easy to accept, isn't it? Idolatry of music, how dangerous is that? But what he's saying is music has become his idol. Music's become his God. Wow, really? We make idols of celebrity. We've actually made idols of success. We've made idols of our own possessions. We've actually made an idol of what I call more and more. We have no problem in our culture possessing more. It's a sign of significance. It's a sign of importance. And I saw somebody's bumper sticker who said, he who dies with the most toys wins, but he still has no toys. It's a sign of plain self-satisfaction. And we're entering into a season, of course, where we worship more and more and more things. And some of it I don't have any trouble with. Gifts are a wonderful expression of love. But the way in which we do it, what are we teaching our children? Are they learning the lessons of love? Or are they be taught to worship the idol of more? You see, when we take Christ at the center, then we have to ask a lot of hard questions about what we do and how we live. If we have Christ at the center of our family, if that's our core value, then what does that mean in terms of how we use our time? What does that mean about how we choose to invest our lives? I happen to be an avid supporter of sports. I love sports. We enrolled our kids in sports. I coached or I helped wherever I could because it was our desire, hear this, to be the presence of Christ in a place where sports often were the God. To Christ at the center does not mean we disengage with this world that has its priorities all messed up. It's that we engage so that people can experience what it means to have Christ at the center. But what we often teach our families in the middle of sports is critically important. When we sacrifice everything in order to make our kids super successful at sports, we may need to rethink our core values. What have we just said? When worship becomes secondary, an option, when living family life becomes compromised, when our finances are placed in jeopardy, when we go into debt in order to give our kids these great opportunities, we may need to rethink whether our core values are really our core values or are they just a product of a piece of paper. And of course, this can be true for music or dance or all the other wonderful things that we can be involved in. Each family has to make their own decisions about how this has worked out. But we need to make those decisions against the core value, Christ at the center. Will what we're about to do help us to live out Christ at the core, at the center? What's the actual message our children are receiving? Sometimes we have to sit down as a family or as a couple and actually talk about, is this exactly what we're experiencing as a result of the decision that we've made, or are we experiencing something different? Do you see? Sometimes we think this will be the outcome, and it's not the outcome. It's only with Christ at the center that we can have any hope of staying solid and in strong in a culture that is eroding what it means to be a family. Well, we decided our second value should be family first. Family first. Listen to the way Joshua puts it again. Folks, you can make your own decisions about serving the Lord, but as for me and my house, I'm not going to really give too much credence to what you're going to decide. I'm not going to allow it to sway my decision. We've already made our decision. Our decision, our family first decision, is to serve the Lord. In other words, I'm taking responsibility for my family first. I will do my very best to lead this nation, but at the end of the day, how I lead my family matters the most. Our family will try to model what it means to honor God, what it means to be a family. Have you ever noticed that we live in a world of comparison? I'm actually going to be so bold as to call it the sin of comparison. Our kids did it all the time. Look at what that family has. How come they get a new car? Look what they went on vacation. And all we did was go to Bicycle. Look at all the things they have. And we're sweating buying a new bat and ball? So there's all this comparison going on. Look at what she's wearing. And look at what I wear. Look at how much money I make. And look at how much they make. Look at the house they live in. And look at the house they live in. Lori and I were talking one day, and we discovered that, you know, it didn't much matter how little we had or how much more we had. There was always somebody who had less than we did, and there was always somebody who had more than we did. I can't imagine it, but Bill Gates actually has to deal with that, right? There's probably somebody out there who has more than Bill Gates. It's the sin of comparison. We used to say to our children, okay, that's great, kids, but we are doing this. Those people don't live in our house. We do. In other words, we don't have to answer to God for their priorities. We have to answer to God for our priorities. And one of our priorities in this family is family first. What does that mean? That means that we would make decisions that would benefit our family, even if sometimes other people didn't like the decision we were making, or it affected them, or they disagreed with them, or they just don't understand it. We had family night on Monday night. So this is something we decided to do because Monday night was my day off. It wasn't negotiable. It wasn't discussable. Monday night was family night. It settled. We spent that evening together, no interruptions. Now, where did that mean it was hard for me and where was it hard for my wife? Well, that meant that Lori and I didn't actually book things that night either. It was set aside for family. We had fun. Or we'd show a travel video from another country and eat that kind of food that they would eat. And the kids did a little research on that country and they would share it together. And we had fun. But what that meant was I didn't book any meetings that night. Nothing from Bonavista Church, nothing from our denomination. I remember, you know, sometimes denominational meetings would come up and they'd say, how about Monday? I'd say, no, you have your meeting, but I won't be there. I didn't book meetings that night. That no matter how urgent it may have seemed to others, this was priority. We made sure that our children knew that they always had access to us, that they came first. I'd often ask the office administrator, I'd hire a new person, I would say to them, listen, I put my family first. And when they call on the phone, no matter who I'm with, what kind of counseling session I'm in, or what's going on, they get through. No one else, but they always get through. You get the idea. Sometimes we would take them out of school. We'd go to the teacher and say, we have something that we need to do as a family because our family comes first before school. So we're going to be not in school for the next week or two because we're going to be doing this together. They were always cooperative. But here's the other side of family first. We wanted them to see that Christ was at the center of our home. We spent time in the morning at breakfast time in prayer and reading the Bible, discussing it so that we could all experience together what it meant to have Christ at the center. By doing that, we made sure that our children knew that family was first. In other words, it's this. If you really believe in family first, then that means that the family has to get your best attention, needs to get your best care, needs to get your best effort, rather than what's left over. At least that was our core value. That's what we tried to do. Now, I want you to be very understanding. As far as I know, our family is about as perfect as it can possibly be. We've never made any mistakes, and so I have the opportunity of just sharing success stories with you here today. Why are you laughing? You don't believe me? Your family too? Yeah, family. Okay, I'll step aside and I'll let the Benner share this next part. Sometimes I came home frustrated and irritated up to here with the things that had been happening, not with any of you. It was all those people that aren't here today. And I came home and I did everything but put my family first. It was me first day. One day I got so angry about how things were going that when I got home, I just started shouting and making absolutely no sense to anyone. I was completely irrational, and it started making the kids laugh. I can tell you how well that went over. There will be no laughing in the home when Dad is mad. So we brought an end to the laughing. But actually, in a funny way, it was proof that living out Christ at the center and the family of life is not easy but important. So if you're going to really believe that Christ is at the center and that family is first, and you came home really, really angry after a day that didn't go so well, and you blew your top and didn't handle things very well, what should you do next? Ignore it. Always ignore it. Pretend like you didn't behave that way. No. What did I have to do? I have to sit down with the kids, and we have to have a conversation about how sometimes we don't live up to the values that we agreed to. And this time, Dad didn't. And he's sorry. And that we're going to do our best to try and not live that way anymore. I also learned this that day. That if Christ is going to be at the center of your home, then those values that we have taken on have to be lived out in the tough and difficult days. The third value is mutual respect. One of the commandments that Joshua was borrowing from Moses, remember Moses got the Ten Commandments, and now Joshua was following up with Moses, was this, to honor your mother and your father. Ephesians 6, chapter 1 through 4, or chapter 6, verses 1 through 4, brings that same commandment, honor your mother and father, forward, and then adds this to it, that parents are not to exasperate their children, but to bring them up in the training and the instruction of the Lord. Well, I could spend a series of messages just on this verse. So much to discuss, but suffice it to say that at least part of this instruction is to create a sense of mutual respect in your home. My wife, Lori, grew up in a home where there was a lot of what people call sibling rivalry. And for many, that means that you just kind of shrug your shoulders and say, well, it's just sibling rivalry. We'll let it go. That just happens between kids. But for her, it became a very hurtful and destructive thing. And so we wanted to create in our home an atmosphere of mutual respect. We would not tolerate sibling rivalry. We will not tolerate abusive behavior. We will not tolerate demeaning language. And in this, we learned this. How can you ever hear the voice of God if you can't learn to listen respectfully to one another? How can you ever hear the voice of God if you can't learn to listen respectfully to one another? I didn't say, however, that the home is a place that you create a place of constant agreement. I said respect. Some parents this morning might say, yeah, you preach it, brother. Tell my kids to respect me. But respect, of course, goes both ways. And it's created both ways. You create respect by showing respect. As parents, you must also teach respect. It doesn't come naturally. Home's a place where respect is expected. One day our kids came home from school and you could hear them yelling down the street, over a block away. Lori greeted them at the door and said, bless you, my sisters and brothers. And told them that if they couldn't speak respectfully to each other, then she was going to tie them together and send them back to school that way. Isn't that a lovely image? But they knew their mother well enough to know that they better not test her any further. Respect means that you don't treat each other this way. But it doesn't mean you can't challenge. But God created the home to be a place where we learn to respect one another and learn along the way to be obedient to God. God is always at work shaping our pride into a spirit of humility that comes through mutual respect. The final value is character. I put it this way. We chose to value character above performance. We chose to value character above performance. I remember one day when I was 17 years old, I wanted to buy a car. And so this is my first loan at a bank. And so I asked my dad if he could help me with that, you know, get a loan from the bank. And he said, sure, I'll do that. Let's go down to the bank. I'll make an appointment with our banker and we'll go and see what he has to say. Well, we got to the bank. And just as we were about to enter into the banker's office, my dad said to me, you know, Murray, my dad did this with me when I was about your age. And when I got to the banker said, you know, my dad's name was Willard. He said, Willard, your dad has always been trustworthy in the way in which he's handled his banking. And so on the basis of that, I'm going to give you this loan. And that's exactly what happened to me. I went to the banker, and the banker said, on the basis of how your father has conducted himself at this bank, I can give you this loan. Isn't that wonderful? And what he was teaching me is that integrity matters, meeting our obligations, honoring our commitments as a sign of integrity. But does that mean that we never make mistakes then in order to maintain integrity? No. Sometimes life happens. Sometimes we make mistakes. Sometimes we make we make serious miscalculations. What do then in order to maintain integrity? We own up to our mistakes. We take responsibility for what we've done. That in itself is a demonstration of integrity. This can be the greatest test of character. I may score 100 goals for my hockey team, but if I'm slamming my teammates or other players, then I have no integrity. If a cashier gives me too much money in return for what I've paid, I make it right, and then I allow my son to watch me, and he learns character in the process. But I want you to know that I want for my family is not just character. I want for them godly character. Oh, there's no question about it. I want them to know the difference between right and wrong. I want them to know the truth and to pursue the truth. But what I really want for them is to know the God of all truth. It's not enough to know right and wrong or what's true and what's not true. I want them to know the God of truth. I don't want them to be just good citizens or nice people or morally upstanding. I want them to be men and women who know how to follow Christ and to live out the gospel. To as Micah chapter 6, 8 says, to act justly and to love mercy and to walk humbly with my God. And the only way that could possibly happen for my son Michael and my daughter Melissa and for all 7 of our grandchildren is if we live this out in front of them like Joshua was trying to live it out in front of the people of Israel. So I ask myself, will I stand up for the immigrants and protect them in the face of hostility and prejudice? Will I pray with my neighbor who teaches in a local school and is devastated by students who have faced suicide? Will I walk with those who face mental illness and are ostracized because of it? As a family, can we support children through Compassion Canada? As a family, can we include people from a rehab center for Thanksgiving dinner? As a family, we pray together for friends who need Jesus. As a family, we've visited in hospitals. We walk alongside those who are in prison. We take care of the vulnerable. As a family, we take care of a foster child, or we look after caregivers. We take our children when they're young. We took our children when they were young to visit their grandparents and the great-grandparents in the nursing home. And along the way, they learned how to care for other older folk who are also living there. To be a person of godly character means to be a person who deeply cares about other people first. It means to be a person who knows how to lay down sacrifice. It means to listen to the heart of God more than the noise of our culture. It means to walk humbly with God rather than to strut with the devil. Our values, stated or unstated, will shape the kind of life we live and the kind of family we have. Talk together about the kind of values you need in order to establish the kind of home that will honor God. I can tell you, it takes work. And along the way, you may discover some old values that have been hanging around the edges that need to be gotten rid of, that are dragging you down. It's not easy to break old habits. What you value will determine who you serve. We are to be Christ-centered. That's the most critical decision you will make. We practice family first and mutual respect and character over performance. These are the kind of families that will thrive in the face of spiritual adversity. These are the kind of families that will honor God. These are the kind of families that will create relational safety and security for those in them. These are the kinds of families that will quietly but effectively change their worlds. These are the kind of families that God desires to honor and to bless. And it is the kind of family that I know you want and you long for and that you've been working hard for. And it is my prayer alongside of you today that this sermon will help you to take the next few steps that you need to take to continue on in that family journey wherever you're at. You see, Lori and I are grandparents. We've come a long ways, but we're not done by any stretch of the imagination. We still are developing and laying out these values with our grandchildren, and it will continue on into the future. So, let's hold these together. I talked about it at the beginning, that if this is going to have any meaning at all, we have to talk about them. So some of you aren't married yet, some of you married all the way down, single, whatever, but there's somebody in your life that you can talk about these things with. Don't let it ride, don't let it go. Don't let this morning just be another morning. Have that conversation. Lord, how would you have me and our family to live? How can we have this conversation in a meaningful way? So Lord, I pray this morning that you will bless each one of them, people that are here today. You know their family circumstance. You know their life circumstance far better than I do. You know, Lord, that you have called us all to make Christ at the center of our home. As for me and my house, we will serve the Lord. And so, Lord, I ask that you will make us wise, that you will make us attentive, that you'll help us to have that conversation, that, Lord, you will build your church through families that are rooted and strengthened in you. We pray in Jesus' name.